Chapter 48, Paul Again Before Nero. When Paul was summoned before Nero for trial, it was with the near prospect of certain death. Among the Greeks and Romans it was customary to allow an accused person an advocate who, by force of argument, impassioned eloquence, or tears, often secured a decision in favor of the prisoner, or succeeded in mitigating the severity of the sentence. But no man ventured to act as Paul's advocate. No friend was at hand even to record the charge against him or the arguments he urged in his own defense. Among the Christians at Rome, not one came forward to stand by him in that trying hour. The only reliable record of the occasion is given by Paul himself: "At my first defense no one took my part, all deserted me. May it not be charged against them. But the Lord stood by me and gave me strength to proclaim the word fully, that all the Gentiles might hear it. So I was rescued from the lion's mouth," RSV. Nero had reached the height of earthly power, authority, and wealth, as well as the lowest depths of iniquity. There were none to question his authority. The decrees of senators and the decisions of judges were but the echo of his will. The name of Nero made the world tremble. To incur his displeasure was to lose property, liberty, life. Without money, friends, or counsel, the aged prisoner stood before Nero, the countenance of the emperor bearing the shameful record of passions that raged within, the face of the accused telling of a heart at peace with God. Notwithstanding constant misrepresentation, reproach, and abuse, Paul had fearlessly held aloft the standard of the cross. Like his master, he had lived to bless humanity. How could Nero understand or appreciate the character and motives of this Son of God? The vast hall was thronged by an eager crowd that pressed to the front. High and low, rich and poor, learned and ignorant, proud and humble, all alike were destitute of a true knowledge of the way of life and salvation. The Jews brought against Paul the old charges of sedition and heresy, and both Jews and Romans accused him of instigating the burning of the city. The people and the judges looked at Paul in surprise. They had looked on many a criminal, but never had they seen a man wear a look of such holy calmness. The keen eyes of the judges searched Paul's face in vain for some evidence of guilt. When he was permitted to speak in his own behalf, all listened with eager interest. Once more Paul uplifted before a wondering multitude the banner of the cross, his soul stirred with an intense desire for their salvation. Losing sight of the terrible fate that seemed so near, he saw only Jesus, the intercessor, pleading in behalf of sinful men. With eloquence and power, Paul pointed to the sacrifice made for the fallen race. An infinite price had been paid for man's redemption. Provision had been made for him to share the throne of God. By angel messengers, earth is connected with heaven, and all the deeds of men are open to the eye of infinite justice. Paul's words were as a shout of victory above the roar of battle. Though he might perish, the gospel would not perish. Never had that company listened to words like these. They struck a chord that vibrated in the hearts of even the most hardened. Light shone into the minds of many who afterward gladly followed its rays. The truths spoken on that day were destined to shake nations and to live through all time, influencing men when the lips that had uttered them should be silent in a martyr's grave.